Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart, and where is my glass? That's supposed to be out already. Jack, you know better. This week's episode was great. I was so excited to sit down with comedian Gary Owen. Gary Owen is a massive, long time, been doing this 20 plus years comedian. He's actually known affectionately as a crossover act. Gary, who is a white man married to an African-American woman, is affectionately, probably, I say this during the interview, is that he's the Eminem of comedy, or even mentioned Ralphie May. He has a huge black audience draw. His audience is probably primarily black women. Gary's in town for the Houston Improv, and we decided to sit down and talk about his long career. Gary's been doing this more than 20 years. And you know me, I love comedians who've been married for almost as long as they've been comedians. John Witherspoon, Gary Owen, been together for more than 16 years married. So I love just the dynamic of this crazy, hectic lifestyle that's not conducive for a healthy, long marriage, and somehow these guys pull it off. I have a lot of respect for that. This week's episode, jumping right into ads here. This week's show is, as always, sponsored by Chilado Distill Artisan Spirits, leader in premium artisan products like Bunahaben, Deanston, Lechaig, Tobermory, Baines, Black Bottle, and, of course, Scottish Leader. And this week, we have a new focus. Very excited about. This is a little 13-year-old blended Scotch whiskey called... Listen, I don't speak Gaelic, so I'm going to butcher this. Ordamaise. Distilled in 2003. 13 years old, non-chill filtered, not added color. We've talked about that. You remember those three things I talked to you about? There's three signs before you ever taste a whiskey that will let you know that there's a little bit effort, a little bit more effort and quality put behind the bottle. A bump in proof, so this is from 80 proof to 46%, so 92, right? Do the math, 92. Non-chill filtered and no added color. So that right off the bat before I ever taste it is definitely promising. So Whiskey Neat is supported by the Inspired Spirits at Glass Rev Imports and Murray McDavid. The historic Colburn Distillery Whiskey Storehouse in the heart of Speyside is packed to the brim with thousands of delicious whiskey casks. There, the Whiskey Creations team apply their crafts to age, finish, blend, and of course, they bottle unique statements of the greatest Scottish whiskies born of raw casks from the greatest Scotch distilleries, past and present. Are these expressions of legendary whiskies a result of art, science, or perhaps a little of both? Discover the Inspired Scotch Whiskies from Murray McDavid at your local liquor store today. Boom! You don't know this because my great friend Jack over here has trimmed out all the wrong reads, but this is like the 45th time I've tried to read this, and for some reason, you know, I think it is we didn't have much to drink on the show today. I had one glass. Our guest Gary Owen didn't drink, and yeah, so it took me a minute to get through this and to get it flowing off the tongue just right. So this perfect read is brought to you by Jack Brame. Houston Whiskey Social tickets. We are 2 months out from the event. HoustonWhiskeySocial.com. You can find Gary Owen, the incredible, fun, definitely not a diva comedian. You can find him at the Houston Improv. He's going to be in Dallas or Austin soon. And then, of course, for New Year's, he'll be doing the Dallas. He does a Dallas theater. You can look up Gary Owen's tour dates there. It is an incredible honor to sit down with him. I had a great time, a great discussion. We got to talk about all my favorite comedians. So, yeah, without further ado, Gary Owen. Cheers. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having
me. Very nice meeting you, man.
Nice meeting you.
I'm very excited to have you here. We do a lot of stuff with Kira and the Improv, and gotten a lot of big guests here. But you're a Houston regular. You come here quite often.
I try to keep it like once a year.
I do hear that that's probably the plan because specials, and you don't want to come in with the same material within a short amount of time.
Yeah.
You've been doing this forever, man. Like 20 years?
Yeah, 20 plus.
20 plus. And I'm excited to have you here. So normally what we do is we normally start off with a drink. Now, I know that you're not a whiskey drinker, but I thought I would try you on something. You don't have to. It is 9 a.m.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on drinking this early.
Okay.
I just moved from Ohio to California, and I've already dove feet first into being a California guy. So I just had the manager and my road manager go get me an oat milk latte.
Sure. You're definitely Californian now.
Without question.
Yeah.
And it's so good. I'm making no apologies for it.
Make sure it's gluten-free.
Yeah.
So I watched the episode with Judd Apatow and Joe Rogan. I watched the episode when Brendan's assistant, Brandon Callen.
Brian Callen.
I know his name. throwing a little shade at you, yeah. And then your response, yeah.
That was all fun, though. But Brian, it was funny. And now that we've got to know each other, I went on their podcast. It was just funny because, I go, dude, we had a scene together in a movie.
You guys worked together, yeah. Like, you had lunch together, I think, too, yeah.
Yeah, well, my first day on Ride Along, I enjoy, and that's what we were talking about, John Witherspoon, the times I enjoy on set. I mean, it's one thing to be acting and working, but I enjoy like eating lunch and just really looking back going, God, I've had some deep, great conversations with some really interesting people that most people would probably pay to have conversations with.
Sure.
To be, just to sit down and with Taraji, or like when we shot Think Like a Man 2, we were all staying at Caesar's Palace, and then me and Gabrielle, for some reason, just bonded, and we'd
Union.
Always, what's that?
Gabrielle Union?
Yeah. We'd always be like, we had this little, there was this little bar that she liked wine, and we'd sit there and, get off work at 5, and we'd talk about life and marriage, because she was getting married the next year, and I was the guy that had been married, and we had our little spot where they didn't see us, like the crowd.
Sure.
And then every time I'd walk her back to her elevator to get to her floor, she'd walk behind me and just hold on to my shirt with her head
trying
down
to hide.
So nobody would see.
Sure.
I'm way bigger than her. But it's just like little things like that that I
cool life experience.
I relish. And so when Brian said he didn't remember me, I go, dude, my first day on Ride Along, him and John Leguizamo came in, and they had already been filming for a couple weeks. So I sat down next to him because the principal cast eats separate than the extras and everybody else.
Oh, really?
Because you don't want people's sure. pictures and everything else. So, I sat down with him, and I think John knew who I was, but Brian clearly didn't.
Sure.
But I didn't say anything. I just listened to them talk. I made sure I didn't interject or anything. I just eaten. I was with them, but I was just sitting
just
there.
Just being Gary, yeah.
Just lay fly on the wall. And then the next day we had a scene together. He said... Then when he got on the podcast, he said, yeah, I heard of that guy. I go, heard of me?
You know me.
We work together. Like, we're right there on camera. Well, the one thing, it was funny when Judd Apatow went on Rogan and said, you know who the funniest guy on the planet is?
He said it was the loudest laughs he's ever seen
at a comedy club. Yeah.
He was so caught off guard at how it was a genius moment.
Well, it was kind of a perfect storm. There's been a couple times that's happened to me because my fan base is, I have a huge black fan base. And a lot of comics that aren't familiar, they come in wanting to do a guest spot, and they're taken off guard by it. Whoa. That happened with Dane Cook when he was getting ready to host SNL. He came to New York, and they said, hey, Dane wants to do a couple guest sets to get ready for his monologue on SNL. And I said, yeah, that's fine. He didn't know the audience, right?
Sure, sure.
So he came in on Thursday. He never showed up on Friday. Like, I was like, that's not the SNL audience, you know?
It didn't go well.
Well, it's not that it didn't go well. It's just some of the stuff he talked about went over the crowd's head. Like, what are you talking about right now? And then it wasn't the right crowd to get ready for SNL. If he was getting ready for Showtime at the Apollo, that was the perfect crowd to try your SNL monologue.
Sure, sure.
And plus, he's not doing his act. Like, any veteran comic, you can adjust to the audience. But when you're working on a specific thing, like I did, I was working on a Tonight Show set one time, and I never did the Tonight Show. And I kept going up at comedy clubs, and they kept putting me up after the most vulgar comic for some reason. And I'm going through trying to be this five clean. Minutes of clean. I bailed every time. Screw this. I just got into my act. I just come after. I'm not doing a Tonight Show. Either they want me or they don't.
So did you do it?
Never did. I never submitted it. I never got through the 5 minutes of clean for the Tonight Show. And then I went, now we're in an age where you don't really need it either.
No.
Like, it hit me. I was like, I don't really need this for my career. But going back, Judd Apatow, so Dane did that. And this is not a knock on Dane. He could have easily jumped into his act. But once he came Thursday, he didn't come back Friday. And they told me he's coming Thursday and Friday to get ready for SNL.
Sure, sure.
He went somewhere else. I guess he went to the cellar.
You knew exactly what happened, yeah.
Yeah, and so Judd comes. He's getting ready to do Bonnaroo. So they was like, Judd wants to do a guest set. And I said, okay. So Judd went up and
on
did
Friday.
His thing on, yeah, Friday or Thursday. Yeah, whatever day it was. And he did his thing because, you know, he's off color, did some, you know, crazy like family dynamic, inappropriate humor.
Oh, like Louis C.K. stuff.
Yeah, like Louis C.K. And so he went up, and then I saw him and his manager sit in the back of Zany's, and I saw him. And it was like the crowd almost went, we got you, Gary.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're going to make sure they remember this night. Not that they did, but it was just I got on stage, and they were right in the pocket, man.
Did he say anything to you? Did you know that night it was perfect?
Yeah, I knew on stage. I was like, whoa, this is going really well. And the biggest thing I took out of when he went on Rogan was he said my material was good.
Sure.
It's one thing to have laughs. You can get cheap laughs in this business.
From crowd work.
Yeah, but, yeah. You know, like, fairly who likes getting blowjobs? Everybody.
Sure.
That's an easy one.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But the fact that he sat and really listened, like he said on Rogan, I really listened to the jokes. He goes, and it was good.
It made an impression on him, yeah.
Yeah, and then what was funny was Rogan just kind of blew it off. He just went, oh, that's the white guy that does the black comedy?
Yeah.
And then moved on to something else. And I'm going, hold on. Judd Apatow just said, this is the funniest guy he's ever seen.
And that was
just
your
let
response.
It go? moved on?
Do you think that was Joe not knowing who you were, or do you think that was him purposely trying to just kind of not think much of the comment?
I think it was a combo.
Yeah?
I think he knows who I am, obviously, because he said the white guy does the black humor.
Sure, sure.
But I think it's just a different... until you see me live, a lot of people could say I'm pandering. Or I think sometimes white comics, especially when they see, like me, I'm a white guy doing black comedy, they wonder why. Like, how does he do it?
Well, you kind of slipped into it naturally, right? It's not like you're pandering on purpose. You weren't aiming for anything.
And you don't pander, you play. That's how I always say. You don't pander. I don't pander to anybody, but I play to my audience. And what I mean by that, if I'm doing Showtime at the Apollo, I'm not talking about Garth Brooks.
Sure.
If I'm doing the West Virginia State Fair, I'm not talking about Lil Wayne. You have to know your audience also.
Well, and if you're the Dixie Chicks, you don't talk about Bush, right?
Maybe
like,
not.
Like maybe
yeah.
not. Yeah, maybe
you
that's not your audience.
Yeah. You have to know your audience.
Sure.
You know? Some jokes are universal. Some without question. So I'm not a political guy. I'm not that smart. You know, I cannot do what Trevor Noah does. There's just no way, seeing his stand-up.
I don't know that many can.
Yeah, I don't. Like Jim Jefferies. Sometimes I wish I was that free on stage. I'm not that free. Like, he is, like, it doesn't matter. He could really care less what you think. And he almost relishes.
Doug Stanhope.
Yeah, they almost relish in the backlash. You know what I mean? I hope I offend you.
The difference between your situation that happened with the R word and Tom Segura's situation is Tom just ignored it. And then eventually doubled down on it. Like, he made jokes about it and stuff, you know?
Well, I've doubled down recently. And my new hour, I'm
doing
going back at it. Because the problem is, I did a joke where I talked about my cousin.
Sure.
And she has special needs.
Right.
So she's not mad. So what are you mad for? And the... I'm not playing a victim at all.
Sure.
But the bullying that came with it, because I was the perfect level of celebrity to come after, because I wasn't big enough that I could say F off.
Sure.
But I was big enough that you can get some press out of it. And what it killed me was, so I've basically lived my whole life a decent human being, I think. And I tell a joke that a certain segment of people that are offended by it, and not a large segment, a small one, and you want to like ruin my livelihood? Like that was sure. Your goal was, we don't want him telling jokes.
Cancel culture.
We don't want him to provide for his family anymore. That's what got me. Like, it's one thing to be upset, we didn't like the joke, let's have a conversation about it. No, they went the route of, I had the TV show coming out on BET, and they were trying to threaten sponsors. Like, McDonald's sponsored Special Olympics, so we're going to try to get McDonald's not to do your... I was like this. So I had to, like...
Address it.
I went to... flew to D.C. I met with all these advocates and these special needs people. And I even told the advocates, I said, I think you're the problem. I say, it's not them. I said, because you're saying I can't joke about anybody. And... but... I do joke about people because I'm not better than them. If I really thought I was better than somebody, I wouldn't bring them up.
Sure.
That's bullying. But if everybody's equal.
Treat them as equals, yeah.
Yeah, if everybody's equal
term. Make fun of me, make fun of
because
them.
Because I tried to ask them, what's funny? And they couldn't give me an answer. I go, well, you tell me what is acceptable humor towards my cousin if she does something funny.
Right.
You tell me. They couldn't give me an answer. I was like.
Well, if you joke about it at home, and from what I understand, you told her about it. I think you changed her name to Tina for the show.
Yeah, it's not her real name.
Yeah. But you said you told her about it afterwards, and she's like, wait, I'm not?
Yeah, we're fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Her mother's fine. My aunt's fine with it. You know what I mean? She even said she was really mad about it. Because it kills me. You wasn't there growing up with her. I was. You wasn't playing Barbie and Ken dolls with her. I was. You know what I mean?
Well,
you didn't go swimming in the back pool with her when nobody else was there, and they trusted me enough that I'm going to look out for her.
Right.
You weren't there for then, but now you're mad at me?
Acting like you're a bully.
But I can talk about fat people.
Sure.
Tall people, skinny people. Sure. I can talk about anybody else. Because that's all I did. I didn't... The thing about it, when I did the joke, I didn't put my cousin down. The R word was a description of her. It wasn't one to put her down because of
sure.
it. I'm describing her. No difference. And I got a cousin Joey. He's tall.
Sure.
You know, that's what got me about that whole thing.
So you've gone through it. It's been a year. You feel like you've got how you're going to handle anything like this moving forward. Like you know exactly. So meaning you said you got a new joke about it in your new mm-hmm. special.
Well, I'm talking about what I went through.
Oh,
with
I see.
That.
Oh, so you're, that's even meta about it. Like you're making it about what you went through and using that to tell a joke. Do you think that may face some backlash? And if so,
it could.
How are you going to deal with it?
Well, the difference was, you know, I don't have the TV show right now.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So you got nothing to lose.
So there's not really.
I'm a huge defender and proponent of if I'm paying or clicking on, I know what your sense of humor is. I know how your jokes are. I've watched mm-hmm. your specials. If I, Gary's got a new special. I'm clicking on it. Clicking on it to watch your act.
Yeah.
I'm not clicking on it to control your act. Like, it's not like you're consenting to what you're about to see. So if you get offended, I feel like that's on you, not them. What's his name? Kramer freaking out on a few people, maybe not the best thing. But
right.
But if you're being funny, it's part of your act. I have no, if it's funny, it's okay. I like to say, if it's funny,
well,
it's okay.
People go to, I think a lot of people go to stand up for the escape, to hear the uncomfortable. To be like, I can't believe you said that, you know. I'm sensitive proof. Like, I don't, nothing offends me.
Well,
nothing that offends me.
I think you're kind of in an interesting spot too, because while you are accepted as that crossover comic, there is some lines you still have to walk. I love The Breakfast Club, but your first interview. The thing about Charlamagne, I can never tell if he likes somebody or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always interesting to me to watch those Breakfast Club interviews and not know. Were you nervous at all? Did you?
Uh-uh.
I
knew going in, and I did a video probably 7 years ago when he got jumped. outside the studios of Breakfast Club.
Mm-hmm.
I did a video because everybody's going at him. He ran. I said, he should have. I said, you don't fight people. I said, he should have ran. Stop acting like he did the wrong thing by running.
Sure.
I said, what's he going to gain from that? You run.
Plus,
you
hide. This is your money right here. This is your act, right? What if something happens?
If somebody is willing to jump you outside of the radio station because you didn't play something of theirs, they got nothing to lose. That's an indictment on them.
Sure.
More than anything else. So I'm like, I'm not even trying to. I don't want them people in my world at all. Let me just get away from them. But I don't think Charlamagne, before I started doing the Breakfast Club on the regular, I just think he didn't know, like, almost like Rogan. I think Rogan doesn't know about me.
Sure.
So I'm this anomaly, like,
is he,
you know, is he this type of dude or is he not? You know, but that's why I think when he did the Apatow thing, I think, you know, I'm a white guy doing big black audiences. I think sometimes white comics are like, why? And a lot of times it's almost like, well, I can't do that. And it's a weird dynamic, like, why can't I do that? And so when you don't know something, the unknown, you just kind of stay away from it. And I think that's what Joe did with Judd. Because I don't know enough about that world. I'm just going to stay away and move on.
Sure. There's a sense of painting you into kind of a, almost a dismissive box with the way you say those things, right? Like when you say, it's just that white guy that does black comedy, right?
Yeah.
You didn't say that about Ralphie.
Right.
Ralphie wasn't said that. And Ralphie was very much a crossover act. He appealed to everybody. He could say the N-word on stage.
Yeah.
No problem. Somehow.
Well, he had problems as people didn't hear about it. He had a huge problem on the Tom Joyner Morning Cruise.
I missed it.
Everybody did.
Oh, really?
I didn't because I got. They say texts don't work in the middle of a cruise ship. Oh, they work. I guess you know Tom Joyner's a huge radio guy. He does this thing called the Fantastic Voyage every year, and it's like 3,000 black people on a ship.
Uh oh.
And it's all he does. He brings like Charlie Wilson and Frankie Beverly. It's huge acts. And they bring a couple comics every year, too. One year they brought Ralphie. And Ralphie did the shock, like I'm saying, Louis C.K., Doug Stanhope type deal. But he tried to go in on the black people. Now, you got to realize, Tom Joyner's audience is over 35, 9% of the college graduates.
Older.
They are uplifting black culture, black people. They're trying to break the stereotypes you see on TV.
Sure.
They're actually the black people the media should be covering on a daily basis.
Sure.
And he did a couple jokes, and they were like...
And he doubled down?
And they let him have it, and I heard it was very awkward. And the fact that he's on a ship and can't leave.
Sure, you can't go anywhere.
Woo!
And you're there for, what, a week?
Yeah.
Right? So you got to go back up the next day?
He's stuck. But I heard it was pretty bad, the stuff he was saying. Like, I would know better. That's what I said. I'm not that free.
Sure.
I'm not that free. I heard it was, I don't know, I'm not going to say it, but I heard it was pretty bad.
It's pretty rough. Well, were you a fan of Ralphie's?
Yeah, like I said, I don't get offended by anything. I wasn't offended by the stuff he said on the Tom Joyner cruise. I'm like, hey.
You were there?
No, but everybody told me what he said, so I don't want to repeat it because it's coming secondhand.
Sure, sure.
But it was some slavery stuff.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, you can't do that on that
show. No.
If you do, it has to be very well written.
And it has to be the right way.
And they don't know him. So he doesn't have the cachet where maybe I think with me, black people trust me.
Sure.
Oh, this comes from a good place.
A good heart.
And
yeah.
I have, my wife's black, my kids are mixed. There's a difference with when Ralphie doesn't have that background and he came at him like immediately like Ralphie does. Boom. They're like,
he's very brazen, very big.
Right off the bat. And he tried to,
no pun intended.
I guess he tried to come off as like, I don't care. And they were like, well, you gonna care
tonight? Yeah, what room are you in?
Yeah. So I mean, like, even when I heard what he said, I was like, oh, I thought it was funny. But with that audience, you're like, yo, that's what I'm saying. You got to know your audience sometimes.
Sure, sure. Well, you've got a long resume of doing a lot of, both being the crossover act, but also you've done a lot of films.
Yeah, it's funny. Whenever I do go to movie premieres, it's verbatim. And I kid around with Michael Ealy all the time. For some reason, every time I've done a movie with Ealy, I sit right behind him at the premiere. And I'll get in his ear, and I'm like, oh, here we go.
this isn't a black movie. It's a good movie that happens to have black people in it. And sure enough, the director go up and say the exact words, and he would just give me a high five.
Yeah, like, he just
put his hand back.
He called it immediately.
And I go, no. I look at it and I go, no, it's a black movie. I go, the caterers are black. My driver was black. I've never been on a blacker production. I didn't see white people for 3 weeks.
we run a whiskey festival here in Texas called the Houston Whiskey Social. When we first started, we would meet with marketing people. And I've never felt more uncomfortable than when you have a discussion with your marketing people about audiences and who you appeal to and how you appeal to it. And my partner, the guy that helped start the event, he was black and or is black.
He was black.
He was black. So we but having those discussions of like, okay, you got to appeal to this age range. We see overwhelmingly, like even the metrics we see on the show, we see slightly less than 20% female. Which I'm comfortable having the male-female audience and how you approach mm-hmm. to it. But then the discussion of like, okay, well, now you've got to make sure that you don't come off the wrong way to this audience or this audience. And it feels wrong having those. But it's like an honest part of like everything. When you mm-hmm. market a movie, when you market an event, you've got to find your weak points and find ways to appeal to that audience, you know. And even seeing you more on like the Rogan, Schaub, and Kreischer, I think there was this part of what I think what happened with Rogan is I think there's a disconnect. You being in Cincy, not really.
Not in that clique.
Not
I'm not around.
Clique, yeah.
I don't go to the Comedy Store for the reasons that we talked about. I guess we could talk about it.
She's gone now, right?
Yeah, she's passed away. But the reason I've never hung out at the Comedy Store is when I first got to LA, I did what you're. In my mind, I was doing what I was supposed to do. I was, quote unquote, paying my dues, doing what I waited in line for a couple weeks, the 3-hour line to be an open micer. You just wait and you put your name on a list. And I was already like telling jokes around the city in the black rooms.
Sure.
And I was like, okay, you got to be a paid regular at the Comedy Store. That was just what the goal was.
And for those who don't know, Mitzi Shore, Pauly Shore's mother, she ran the Comedy Store for a long time before recently passing. I mean, she owned the club since 72, I believe.
Yeah.
So it's arguably like the spot you've got to get in at, and you go ahead.
I do the whole whatever day it was. Let's say Sunday, wait in line 3 hours Sunday. I don't get on the list. Wait in line 3 hours Sunday. Don't get on the list. Wait in line because the line is ridiculous. It's just a bunch of people chasing their dream.
Sure.
And then I get on, and that's like five people got on this Tuesday night at the Comedy Store. And what happens is you go up, you do 5 minutes. Mitzi is like the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And then she tells you like the next day if you're a paid regular or not.
If you passed.
So now you can start getting time at the Comedy Store. And I was the fifth of five. It was four females and me got on that night. And I was fifth. So the four women went up and did their thing. And then I go up. And not to sound conceited, but I clearly had the best set.
Sure.
I mean, it wasn't even close. And like Judd, the material was good.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
This ain't something you've heard before. And I looked in the back of the room, and it's a small room.
Up there?
Yeah, the Comedy Store, the original room, is small. And it probably holds 100, 150 people maybe. And I look in the back, and the four girls are surrounding Mitzi. And she's sitting down, and she's talking to him. And I like, she's not looking at me. And the cockiness in me, like, she probably already knows. She probably already heard about
me. Sure, sure.
I'm good. I called the next day to find out. And they go, yeah, you didn't make it. I go, excuse me?
They How say, you furious. Didn't make it. Like, you probably, like, panicked a little bit, right?
I was so mad because I go, I did what I was supposed to do. I didn't come in there like, I'm owed this. I didn't come in, like, entitled. There was no favors. I didn't call any of the headlining comics. They put in a good word for me. I just did the work to be a paid regular and to not even watch. Because there's no way. I was like, the girls, I don't know if all four made it, but three of them did.
Sure.
And I was like, you didn't even watch. Mm-hmm. And I told myself, I'll never go up in that freaking room, and ever.
Those girls, are they still around?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
None of them.
The fact that you don't remember is probably a good
sign. None of them popped.
That's probably
not a good sign. None of them popped. But I remember seeing. And the crazy part is, I my wife and I took over the main room, because there's three rooms at the Comedy Store. There's the belly room, which is upstairs. That's a really small, intimate room. Then there's the original room, and that's where people go to work out. And then there's the main room. That's the big room. And me and my wife took over
from Guy Tori, right?
The main room. We took over Guy Tori's Fat Tuesday, and I was running it, but I didn't change anything. I didn't change Guy's name. It was still called Guy Tori's Fat Tuesday. We didn't change anything. Only thing that changed was the paperwork and the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Sure.
And we ran it for 2 or 3 years, and it was funny because my wife would – some people didn't know we were together. So my wife would always come back and tell me who was talking smack about me.
Sure, sure.
Or this guy's bitter.
And you're like, oh, this guy's you're off the roster. Yeah.
I interesting story about the Comedy Store was I remember – this is years ago, so this is 2001. Jay-Z came in. And this is how my wife can interact with people. She had a way of disarming people like I've never seen. So this guy comes in, and he's on 10. And that day I was at the Comedy Store, and I wasn't going up. I was just there hanging out. And he goes, yo, we got Jay-Z, Rockefeller's coming in. Rockefeller, Jay-Z. And my wife goes, okay, do you feel tension? I feel tension right now. Let's bring it down a little bit. You know, I'm just saying, he's coming.
Tell him to turn it off.
He coming. We're like, oh, okay. And this is before Jay-Z was mogul Jay-Z. This is before Hova. This is just Jay-Z.
You don't need a hype man. It's just us.
So he keeps saying, I want a booth. We want a booth. We want a booth. And she goes, well, how many of there are you? And let's say 12, right? She goes, you're not going to fit in a booth. He goes, you're going to look ridiculous. All you scrunched up. He goes, why don't you get a table? I get you a long table. It's great to be in the front. You're elevated. It's the best view, honestly, of the actual comedians. No, we need a booth. You're going to look ridiculous. So then the entourage, the crew, shows up with Jay-Z. She pulls him aside and says, I can put you in a booth, or I think it'd be better if you guys sit at a table. It's long. It's more comfortable. And Jay-Z made the final decision. He goes, yeah, we'll take the table. So they all sat at the table. They had a good time. On the way out, they was like, hey, thank you, right? And my wife, classic her, can I speak to you guys for a minute? So she calls them over, and she's got Jay-Z, some other people there, like five dudes. She goes, okay, this guy really, really is passionate about you and Rockefeller Records. She goes, but he should not be the first guy in the room. She said, he came in on 12. We were all chilling at 5.
Sure, sure.
And she goes, he should be the when things don't go right guy.
Sure, sure.
She goes, but he shouldn't be the first. And it's funny because the whole crew goes, yeah, he is like that. He is. And the guy that was on 12 goes, I'm a little hot strung. But she just disarmed everybody. Sure. The fact that she called everybody back, can I talk to you guys for a minute? He should be the first one in the room.
That's
classic her.
Has she ever thought about doing stand-up or anything?
No,
because she's funny. I've seen her on the when she was talking about Brian. I've seen her talk before. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. I mean, that's a great story.
Yeah.
Would you be comfortable if your wife wanted to be a comic?
Yeah, it'd be tough, man. I'd be nervous because my son's opened up for me a few times.
Really?
Yeah. If you go to YouTube and look up Gary Owen's son,
sure,
he pops up, and I'm a nervous wreck.
What he's going to say about you?
Oh, he's got some good ones, though. He's got some dude. The one, and I don't write his stuff. People think, oh, wait a minute. The mixed kid is doing the joke Scary wants to do. Because his best joke.
You know what it's like having a white dad?
No, that's what he said. He goes, well, my growing up, my dad used to whoop me. I felt like it was Chandler's ancestors.
Like it was a little too.
Yeah, felt bad, but I look back, he had a half smile on his face.
He's wearing a hat.
And the crowd's like laughing. I'm going, I didn't say that. And they're like, you wrote that. I go, I did not write that joke.
Do you make jokes? Do you talk about your kids on stage?
A lot.
I wonder that dynamic of if you would feel, because it's funny when it's coming from your son, mm-hmm, how you would shape it and not worry about if there being a blowback from talking about your kids.
No, I'm saying you got to know how far to push the envelope without going too far.
Sure.
And I think Ralphie went too far on the Tom Joyner cruise.
Sure.
Which some of that jokes might have worked in some audiences, not that one. But like I said, you got to know where you're at, the situation.
I love telling people my favorite Ralphie story is his sister delivered my last two kids.
Are you serious?
She's a midwife. And I had no clue who she was. And they look exactly the same.
Oh, for real?
And her last name is May. I never put two and two together, and then when he passed, she made a post about it, about her baby brother. And I was like, oh, my, like, my mind was blown because this woman was, like, there for the birth of my last two children. And it felt like, I felt kind of honored, like, you know.
Well, if you don't know, I mean, we all think comedians were just by ourselves because we're such lone soldiers out there. You don't ever think, like, there's siblings
and family
and cousins and relatives out there. You don't ever think about that. So the fact that you got a woman that looks just like Ralphie.
I mean,
last name May.
Unbelievable.
You're not putting it together. Like, why would you? Why would you?
Never even thought about it.
From Texas, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's from Houston. I wanted to ask you about the hashtag thing. So you put that in front of your specials. You put that in front of your podcast. What's the connection there?
I don't know. I was kidding around one day, and I would just always be like, get some. Yeah. And then they started the podcast, and I go, why don't I just call it hashtag get some.
Hashtag get some.
I started on social media. Started on Instagram.
Sure.
That was the hashtag I used. But I was just like, I don't know. It wasn't some deep meaning. I just was always hashtagging on there. And people seem to respond to it on Instagram. I go, all right, I'll just name my podcast that. So it seemed like simple. No different than my company is called Ask Lisa Inc. Because my manager's name is Lisa.
Oh, and Ask Lisa.
Yeah.
I heard Ask Lisa.
Not Ask Lisa. Ask.
First girl ask I ever dated. Lisa just Inc. Gorgeous
ask
booty.
Lisa. Yeah. No, it's Ask Lisa Inc. And I did that because every time people would ask me something, I'd be like, call my manager. Call my manager. I got to ask Lisa. I got to ask Lisa. And so I just named it Ask Lisa Inc.
So what happens if you ever part ways from her?
We've been together 16 years. I don't think it's going to happen.
You don't think it's going to happen.
And I think I'm her only client left. Like, she did some Jerry Maguire stuff.
So I remember you talking about this at one point. Did you change management companies because your manager was in an apartment, or was it?
Yeah, my first manager.
Yeah, your first manager, yeah.
My first manager when I got to L.A. God. You know, it was crazy because I remember he saw me out, like, open micing somewhere, gave me his card. And it's funny, the guy was just in over his head as far as L.A. It was fine.
He's still around?
It got me. No, he's selling insurance in Virginia now. But I'll give you a couple stories about my first manager who's not in the business anymore.
Sure.
So, couple things. One, when I was thinking about letting him go, somebody brought up my attention. They go, his office is in his apartment. You'll find another manager. I was like, oh. So, two things. One, he books me in Kansas City at a place called the Brass Ring, which is just a ghetto spot. So I bring my opener in. We're not making any money. If we're making 500, the plane ticket's two. It doesn't leave a lot. And I got to give this guy 10%.
Sure.
Doesn't leave a lot. So the promoter put me and the opener in the same room. So I get there and I go, dude, we need two hotel rooms. He goes, oh, I thought you two knew each other. I go, it's not a slumber party. So I had to call
my... We got a bunk bed.
I call my manager up, this guy, and I go, yo, they got me and Johnny in the same room. He goes, I'll handle it. He calls back and goes, that guy's crazy. You guys should just get on a plane and come back. That's your solution? So this is how I got the other hotel room.
Sure.
It's a brother. It's a ghetto spot. I go, hey, man. I go, we can't bring no hoes back. And we in the same room, man. Come on. Right? He goes, yeah.
He took care of you.
He switched the room because I said, we can't bring no hoes back to the room. This is before I was married, by the way.
Sure.
So he goes, yeah. So the dude got us a room off me pulling out. Now I felt obligated to holler at chicks after the show because I'm like, fuck, I can't just go back to the room. So now, the last place I want to be is this ghetto-ass club where it's just Hennessy and weed everywhere, right? Because it was one of the places that you tell jokes and it turns into a nightclub afterwards. I'm ready to go, man. So now I literally have to stay there for hours just talking to girls.
Because if you come back empty-handed, he's like, yeah. I gave you
or
a second.
Or if I don't even try, right? It's one thing, you know. So now I'm like, came back. Oh, my God. I'm on a Southwest flight back to L.A., and I only brought, like, an extra shirt. So my shit's just reeking of weed and Hennessy and black and mild. So I'm like, oh, God. I put the clothes on the next day. So the fact that he couldn't solve that problem. Then I get, here's two things that happened. I get the hosting job on Comic View, and he says, okay, Gary, I'll just tell you the money. BET paid me $25,000 for the whole season of BET's Comic View, which is highway robbery.
I filmed 48 episodes. I basically got $500 an episode on a major TV show. And so he goes, hey, Gary.
I'm going to need 10% of that.
That's what he said. We got the initial offer. Okay, it's $25,000. He goes, but that's just the initial offer. We're going to go. We're going to counter. And we're going to get that money up. And I'll call you back. I go, okay. He calls me back. That's it. Take it or leave it. Those guys are rough. I was like, what? This is out of a movie. You're negotiating taxes? Was take it or leave it, man. Those guys are not playing over there.
How did you find Lisa then?
So here's the fight. So this is why I fired him. He's already on thin ice. Like, I should have fired him already. So I get a meeting with Al Haymon Productions, who now Al Haymon is one of the biggest boxing promoters out there. Huh?
I'll tell you a separate story about him, man.
So Al Haymon had a production company. So they want to give me a holding deal. And it was not a lot of money. They want to hold my TV rights for a year. And, you know, holding deals is a production company or a network gives you a certain amount of money. And then what they're saying is we want to develop a TV show with you. And this money is to hold you. We got a development meeting with Al Haymon to lock this TV deal up. So they give you money. They hold your TV rights for a year. You can't. You can be a guest on TV shows, but you can't have your own.
Sure.
So this is the most money I'm probably ever going to see my first year in LA, right? I'm like, wow, this is for a year. It's great. My manager goes to the bathroom. He's got khaki pants on, and he comes out. He's got the biggest pee stain where he didn't dab the tip.
Sure.
Right? And it's just growing as the moisture sitting there. I'm looking at it going, well, we're about to walk into the meeting to lock this TV deal up. And I said, yo, button your jacket and walk behind me sit down. He goes, what? And he looks down and goes, oh, good. So he buttons his jacket. And I go, you know you're fired, right? Like, I said it as a joke. He goes, oh, man. I go, no, you're fired. So
before you walked in?
Yeah, you're right before me. Like, you know you're fired, right? He thinks I'm kidding, but right. I'm so serious. Right. I just can't. So I fired him like the next day. Anyways. He tried to nickel and dime me for everything he's ever done for him. And that'll let you know where a manager's at. Is in this business, like, managers are like, it's like a stick shift in a car. You're going to shift and get a new manager.
Sure.
But it's also in this business, agents and managers, you always come back, too, if you treat people right. It'll come back. Like, my agent now was one of my first agents in the business. He switched agencies. We've gone our separate ways, but now we're back together because we knew this was a business, and it just
different
ended.
Points in your life.
Yeah, it just ended 15 years ago, and now we're back. He's grown and I've grown. So it's just classic. This guy tried to nickel. When I let him go, I got all these charges that were just like, I was trying to sell T-shirts on the road. So he had a guy make some sketches. He tried to charge me for he charged us for the sketches. What? I didn't use the T-shirts. I didn't like the sketches. Yeah, he charged us. It was every little thing that he did, he tried to charge me. I was like,
trying to make it look like he did a lot more than
what he did. So I just paid it to get him out of my life.
Sure,
it wasn't like an enormous amount of money, but it was a couple $1,000 that I was like, it's one thing to have commissions on shows you book, but the little stuff he was charging me for, like, you came to my house, my wife made crab cakes, so
crab's expensive.
Yeah,
crab per pound's expensive.
You ate three that night, like it was the list, and
like a restaurant.
I went and hired a lawyer. I didn't have a lawyer at the time. I just hired a lawyer for like an hour to look it over. And he goes, dude, and the lawyer didn't even charge me. He goes, dude, I could charge you. He goes, but this is so minor. Just get him out of your life. And I go, yeah, you're right. So I just gave him a little bit of check, and he's gone. So he's gone, and that guy's not even in the business anymore. But how I got Lisa was here's the thing. My career was kind of like I was a hamster on a hamster wheel. I was working, but I wasn't doing anything. Wasn't getting phone calls for TV or film.
Steady, right.
Yeah,
and
I'm still working headliner.
Steady, yeah.
So I'm just, but nothing's happening. So I said, you know what? I told my wife, let's go back to Ohio. This is 2004. I said, let's go back to Ohio. I just need to reset everything. And we got to get out of LA. We got two kids in diapers.
You think that added to the longevity of your marriage? I'm huge into every time I find somebody that, like you, you've been in this business for over 20 years. You're married for 16 years, right, or 15 plus years. I have so much respect for how hard it is. Like, I know a guy that used to be a record producer. right? This guy was happily married when he started, and all of his coworkers told him, you're going to get divorced. And he's like, nah, it'll be fine. And he would, you know, go to events with bands and stuff, and then he'd like, after the show, they'd party with the band on the tour bus, mm-hmm. wake up in another city not knowing that they were going to move the bus overnight.
Yeah.
And they'd have to call his wife and be like, hey, I'm 150 miles, you know, like, yeah. so eventually he got divorced. So I have such incredible, like, I love finding out that Gary Owen's been married for 16 plus years. It's a beautiful family. Do you think that happened and was easier to do because you moved to Cincy?
It helped our marriage because we were having, I don't want to say a hard time, like we were about to get divorced, not like that. It was just, we had two young kids 18 months apart and no help, no support at all. And she wasn't having a nanny. She stopped her career because when I met her, she worked for the Clippers, and then Shaq hired her to work at TWSM. He had a clothing line, a record label called TWSM. So she put everything on hold to have kids and to help my career out. So when I let go of my manager and everything else, she took over. So she was on the phone hustling me up work. And
awesome.
So we moved back to Ohio, and she knew she can only take me so far. She wasn't tapped into Hollywood. And it was crazy. We're in Ohio 6 months. I get this phone call from Lisa, my manager, and she repped Keenan Ivory Wayans and Marlon Wayans at the time. And they wanted to bring me in because they were trying to develop a TV show about an interracial couple. So I fly to L.A. I meet with Keenan, Sean, and Marlon and all the Wayans. There was like 18 of them in there.
Yeah.
And
it's half the family.
Yeah. So I meet with them. And the TV show didn't go anywhere. But Lisa pulls me into the office and goes, I think I could do some stuff with you. I think I could manage you. And I go, oh, let me think about it. Okay. And then she's been managing me ever since.
And it's been
ever since.
Fantastic.
Well, and I tell you, it's crazy. I think what drew us closer together and what helped our relationship, and it sounds warped, is when my brother passed away. My brother passed away of a heroin overdose. And I didn't tell anybody he was on heroin. And a lot of people didn't know the story that the week Ride Along comes out, my brother called, and I don't even know he's on heroin. He calls me and said, you know, I can't stop myself. I think I'm going to die. He just had a newborn daughter. He goes, I want to be here for my daughter, but I cannot stop myself. And he shoots up, and I'm like, what's going on? And his girlfriend gets on the phone and tells me, you know, he just shot up. And I'm like, what? What's he doing?
He was shooting up with you on the phone.
Well, the story might be it's a little confusing. Either the phone went dead and he shot up because he was shooting up, or he hung up and then he shut up and she called me back. I can't remember exactly. I do know I'm on the phone with him. It's a little blurry. And then when I called her back or she called me back immediately, he had shot up. So I don't know if he was shooting up while I was on the phone or right after.
Preparing to, at least.
But he was out.
Yeah, yeah.
When they called back 30 seconds later. And so I'm driving my brother to rehab the week Ride Along comes out. So I'm in the number one movie in the country. Got a great scene in it that people will remember. And I'm driving to Bowling Green, Kentucky with my brother in the backseat of the car. Out. And then we got him into rehab, and he was fine for a couple months after he got out, but then he started using again, and then he ended up passing away. But I didn't tell anybody why he passed away either for about 6-7 months till afterwards. I started reading, like, you got to share this guy's story because
sure.
Other people need to know. And my manager Lisa, not knowing, she gets married, and her husband is his whole family dynamics is about, like, they have these gyms all over the country that addicts can go to. You just have to be clean. You can work out for free. It's basically to get those endorphins going.
Sure, sure. But to replace that high with something else.
So she knows so much about this world that I didn't know. So she doesn't know my brother's on heroin. I don't know that she's all immersed in this world because of her husband. And it was like we
bonded.
You know, bonded. Like, that's why I said I'll probably never leave her. And she's so much smarter than me, too. But that's how I think we got real close, was after that incident.
And then you said how long together? 15 years?
Yeah, Lisa, 2004. So, yeah, 16, 15.
15 years. 15 almost 16 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, luckily I haven't had much of that involvement. Now, alcohol, there's been tons of people in the family that, you know, you've got to be real careful around that. So I'm also, being a father, I don't want to go down that road. We actually had, and I talk about this a lot on the show, but we had a couple doctors in here from the Baylor College of Medicine who specifically study alcohol abuse with veterans, and which is pretty rampant there. And it's actually quite difficult. It takes a lot of work to become an alcoholic, but not the case with heroin.
My brother. I mean, it's not funny, but the sad part is his personality was closest to mine, because we're half brothers. We have a stepdad who I cannot stand,
right,
for obvious reasons. But I got another brother who's been in and out of jail for dealing and using. And Dallas, the one my brother passed away. I remember I said, Dallas, one time he overdosed, and my mom called me and said, can you come talk to him? So I'd always, when he would ever overdose or be in a dark place, I'd go up and talk to him because, one, I was clean, and because, you know, his dad used to use, my brother's not good to talk to, but I'm the clean one, and he kind of looks up to me because I'm the brother that quote unquote made it.
Yeah. You got out, and.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'd go talk to him. I said, Dallas, is it true that you're chasing the first high, like when you shoot heroin, the high's so good, but it's not good again, but you're chasing it? He goes, oh no, it's good every time. The passion in his face. I went, wow.
Well, you really saw it.
The way he paused, he thought about it too. He goes, oh no, it's good every time. It's like, that must be an amazing high.
How do you think you missed that? You think you replaced that side of your family?
Heroin?
No. Well, just the rush that you get. You think you replaced that with comedy?
That's the biggest rush.
Because on stage, getting that. Bert Kreischer says this a lot. There's no approval better than black approval. And when you are up on stage and you do have a successful set, in general, it's great. When you have a successful set in a room that's a black room, it's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah, when I went on Bert's podcast, he was like obsessed about me with the black audience. Yeah, yeah. He goes, how do you do it?
He talks about it constantly.
What happened? How does that happen?
He says nothing, because he's from Florida State, and he'll talk about it. He's like, nothing makes me feel better than when someone, like there's a couple of young guys, they're black, that do, they review stand-up sets on YouTube, just clips of like funny bits. And these guys were howling laughing at one of Bert's sets. So they ended up, Bert found it. Bert contacted them because Bert loves, that's where he gets his approval and success in life is from other people. And had him on the show, and they just talked comedy. And do you think that that's where you kind of replaced your, that's where you get your, that's how you avoided that same thing, was you avoided drugs through comedy, through stand-up sets?
No, there's two reasons. I guess my mindset was different. You grew up in a trailer park, and you got this abusive figurehead in the trailer who's my stepdad. And when he's constantly telling you, you ain't going to be shit, you ain't going to do shit, you're not going to be nothing in life. And he doesn't have a job, by
the
way. So
it's out of spite.
It really was like, I'm going to prove you wrong. And I'm telling you, there's people that I went to high school with that'll tell you, I told everyone I'm going to be a comedian. I'm going to be famous. I'm going to be a comedian. I used to tell girls, you should date me. I'm going to make it. I'm living in a trailer park, never on stage. Because two things happened. One, I was my...
What a sense of resolve.
I might have been in eighth grade, and that commercial was out. I've fallen and I can't get up was out.
Yeah.
And I was telling people...
The Life Alert bracelet ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had a joke about that I was telling just my boys and stuff. And then I'm watching like A&E at the Improv, and a comic did my shit word for word. And God had never seen me before in his life. And I'm going, instead of like comics going, oh, he stole my stuff, I go, oh my God, I'm a comedian. I think just like him. In my brain, I was like, I'm on the right track.
You hit it.
Because that guy thought the same thing I thought when he saw that commercial. And I went, oh my God, the light bulb went off. I go, oh, I got this. I remember I used to sit in class and just sit there going, you guys have no idea who's in your class right now. Like, I would look around at classmates going, do you have any idea?
Do you guys know how famous I want to be?
Like, I look around like, you guys, okay. Nobody wants an autograph. All right. And this.
Ask a garage. There tells you always, no. You sure you want to say no? I'll give you another chance. Yeah. You can say yes. I'll take it back.
Right. There was always this sense of calm that came over, even through, you know, I mean, this abusive trailer, this guy, and, you know, physically and mentally and physically, he's always on me. And this, when I would go to school, was my outlet. I could be funny. You know, I had people that, like, liked me. And then this sense of calm would come over, like, you're going to be okay, Gary. You're going to make it. Like, there wasn't a doubt.
At all.
There wasn't a doubt I was going to work with, like, Eddie Murphy, or I was going to work with Jamie Foxx. I mean, it wasn't a doubt. I was like, I'm going to work with them. I never looked at them like movie stars. I looked at them like, I can't wait to meet him. I would watch the movies like, I can't wait till I meet him.
Were you ever starstruck when you met any of these guys?
None.
None?
I felt like I belonged. Like, yeah? From jump, I was like,
man, I wish nice I meeting had you, man. That sense of confidence and resolve in you to just know for your entire life that that's where you're going to end up.
Yeah, and I hate meeting, like, actors.
I'm on your side now with the straws. She should have gotten.
Yeah.
Do you know who this guy is?
Dude, it's like, no. I was kidding about that.
Yeah,
dude.
I know.
I've been giving the manager of the improv shit all week.
Sure.
So that's just part of it. Like, no straw?
So. There's another club in
look,
town.
Look. It's also,
she's looking. She just opened the door.
The transition isn't smooth for me to take a drink. No straw? So anyway, let's talk about me some more. I just knew. I knew it in my soul. Like, I ran away from home.
Your wife knew it too?
Oh, that's what she said. She fell for me. Because when we met and we talked for like a year on the phone. Then when we started dating, I mean, I was in a S10 pickup, cracking a windshield, and she was like, I needed 2 college credits to get my bachelor's because I was taking college classes and I was in the Navy. Even when I joined the Navy, the whole goal was to get to California. It wasn't to be a lifelong.
Even while you were in the Navy, you ended up going to California.
I picked San Diego because I figured I could do stand. I thought you had to start in L.A. I didn't know you could start in any city. I just didn't know. I thought you have to start in L.A. So I'm thinking, how can I get to California? Oh, I'll join the Navy. They got all the bases. And I got there. The first 2 years I was in D.C., but then I got there. But when I was a junior in high school, I ran away from home. And I went with my buddy Derek Callahan was his name. And we got in a car and we were driving. We went to the bus stop in downtown Cincinnati and we had $13 between us. And he's like, you can get to Louisville. I was like, dang, I got to go back to the trailer. We got to save up some more. But I remember I bought a loaf of bread and I brought the Goober grape peanut butter and jelly. And I had a thermos. And I said, I'll just eat this till I get to L.A. I'll just catch the bus. I'll get to L.A. And I told him, I said, I'll make it. I'm funny. Like, it was like no problem. Like, dude, let's stop at Kroger. I'm going to get a loaf of bread, peanut butter and jelly. It'll probably take 3-4 days on a bus. And I'll eat that on the way. I'll just drink a fountain, get water. I'm good. I'll get out there. I'll make
resolve.
It.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll make it. Like, I just knew I'd get out there and I'd meet somebody. I had this grand idea. I'd meet somebody and be living in Beverly Hills as the guest, like the cool friend. Like, I would just run into somebody on Hollywood. Hey, what's up, man?
That's how Yakov Smirnoff felt. He said the same thing. He said he got a quick break from, you know, trying to get out of you know, Eastern Europe, where he said, I'll spend 10 days in L.A., I'll get famous in 2, and I've got 10 days for a buffer. Like, I'll figure this out. So it's the unwavering resolve and the fact that it ended up working out is pretty impressive. So hats off to you.
Yeah, there's no doubt, man. That's all I want to do. I mean, even when I played high school sports, all that stuff, it was all about, I'm going to be a comedian. My sixth grade gym teacher will tell the story to this day, that the first day of school, I was talking, and he goes, what, do you want to be a comedian or something? I was like, yeah. And he was like, well, not in my class. Like, he literally would say, he tells the story, like, I went at him to say, oh, you're trying to be some comedian? But he said, the look in your face was like, yeah.
He knew it.
He was like, well, not in my class. He had to switch it up. And he ended up becoming my high school football coach. And then we're still close to this day.
You go back to the high school reunions just to strut your stuff?
I go back.
Remember when you said no? Yeah. Remember when you said no?
Thank you. That could have been my life.
Could have been stuck there, yeah.
No, but honestly, my high school classmates were all supportive. Like, none of them was like, you're full of crap.
Sure.
All of them said, man, you're funny. I can see that. You know, there wasn't like people that were like crushing my dreams. Honestly, the people in high school was supportive of it. So there's no like, see, I told you. It's almost like, man, you did it. You said you was good. They'll hit me on the arm. You said you was going to do it. You did it. You know?
Yeah, it worked out. Like
that. My stepdad, on the other hand, different story.
Your stepdad?
Oh, yeah. That's a different story.
So I know we're running out of time. I know you got to go. I just want to make sure I tag on that. So the whole way, as you continue to hit movie after movie after movie, did you ever be like, hey, man, you want to come to the premiere? Like, you ever?
He would never. He's socially awkward. He doesn't leave the house.
Oh,
sure. He doesn't have a job. He doesn't leave the house. He can't function amongst people. He explodes in crowds. And it's the weird. Like, he sucker punched my dad at the wedding. My stepdad.
At your wedding?
My real dad at my wedding at the reception. Just hauled off and. For no reason. Said he looked at him funny. I was like, what? And he was on Rodeo. They came to visit one time. Him, my mom, my brother, when everybody was alive and everything. And he exploded on Rodeo Drive. Like, exploded. God damn.
Just freaked out.
Yelling.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, dude. Like, I got a decent rep in the yeah, town.
Don't do this.
It's going nuts. And the only thing that saved us that day was Muhammad Ali walked out of a hotel room. And that was the one guy he was in awe of. Like, Ali saved the day and didn't even know it.
Distracted him.
And Ali had the best line to my step that I ever heard. Like, he gave it to him in the only Ali fashion.
Wait, what do you mean? So Ali walked
this
out.
This is 2001.
Okay.
So Ali's he's healthy still,
sure.
Right? So my stepdad Rod is on one. He's going off on my mom, my brothers. He doesn't want to be on Rodeo. This is boring. Da da da. This ain't my type of people.
Uh-oh.
Right?
Yep.
He's going nuts. Yelling at the top of his lungs, cussing at people. And Muhammad Ali walks out of a hotel, and somebody goes, there's Muhammad Ali. And he goes, motherfucker. And he walks, beelines at the Ali, walks up, and my stepdad used to be an amateur boxer.
Sure. Right?
So he
sounds
goes
like
to,
it.
goes up to Ali and goes, hey, man, I used to box. He goes, when I used to box, people said my style was a lot like yours. Ali goes, then why aren't you the greatest?
He said that to him?
Yeah. It's like, fucking Ali. Yeah. Thank you, Muhammad Ali. Like, one line. Then why aren't you the greatest?
So what did he say in response to that?
You know, it's Ali. Yeah. I've never seen a man giddy.
Sure.
I've never seen
to be
that
insulted.
Much joy in his life. I've never seen that side of him.
And like, that fixed the whole thing.
He was he got a picture with him. He was good the rest of the trip. Right, he was on cloud nine. That was the happiest I've ever seen him.
And
he still got the picture at his house, at the house of him and Ali. He ain't got a picture of me up. He got a picture of him and Ali. You know, and it's right when Ali's saying that shit to him too.
I want to say one. I know we're running out of time. I want to say one last thing. The funniest 1 minute clip I've ever seen of you, hands down, is, and it's totally a non sequitur of what we were just talking about. But I watched it yesterday. I died laughing. I isolated the clip. I watched it two more times. I sent it to my wife. I sent it to my mother-in-law. It's the funniest clip ever of you talking to Charlemagne the God and Andrew Schultz, and you just happen to take a sip of your drink right as he asks you.
Do I cheat?
Yeah, no, what he asked you was, how long have you been married? And you said, 16 years. And he goes, how long have you been faithful? Right as you took a sip and it went down the wrong pipe. And he started choking, and they lost it.
It was just timing. Like,
it was the perfect.
I was taking a sip. I thought I answered the question, and then they came back to me. So I went to answer. I went.
So how long have you been faithful? And he just choked on it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You guys can check them out. Check them out tonight at the Houston Improv this weekend. You're doing a Sunday show too?
Yeah, we got Sunday. We're probably going to add one pretty soon because everything's gone. We added a third show Saturday. There's a few tickets left for Sunday, but we're probably going to add a second one Sunday.
Absolutely. Houston Improv, check them out this weekend. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Straw.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment,
suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.